This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
Rodzinski is left wing into the Vancouver zone. Passes ring wide for Cooley, far side, threw it up front, they score! Kaapo Kakko driving the middle, sweeps it past Artur Shelov's along the ice, and the Rangers retake the lead, it's 3-2. Hughes, backhand pass to center for Pugh Suter. Left wing to Dakota Joshua, into the Rangers zone, high slot, Garland shoots, he scores!
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Dumped into the Vancouver line, Chris Kreider goes left boards for Zibanejad. Now to Smith in the slot, left wing, Kreider to the net, he scores! A tremendous goal by Chris Kreider as the Rangers move the puck around off the rush into the Vancouver end, and they retake the lead at 4-3.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks battle but lose 4-3 against the Rangers on home ice, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. We are going to bring in Randeep Janda into the conversation coming up in just a moment. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. You can also hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. The Canucks were undermanned when it came to their top-end talent. No JT Miller, of course, no Brock Besser, no Thatcher Demko. We know they're missing three key players that are a big part of their core. And tonight, you could tell, there was a different level the Rangers could get to. They had more depth, more talent. They were the better team. I did think the Canucks had a pretty valiant effort overall. I mean, they laid it all out there. They did their best. Was it good enough at times? There were some mistakes. There were some moments, of course, that we can talk about and dissect. I liked the effort tonight, but simply a better team won the game.
Yeah, that was a valiant effort, especially through 40 minutes where they were going toe-to-toe, even though the shot, you know, balance was in the favor of the Rangers. They had a couple of breakaway chances. Thought Shelov played really well. He made a couple of big saves, especially that one on Lafreniere.
Yeah.
On the backhand, on the breakaway, guys. So, you know, this is a tough one, right? That home run hitting power that you, so to speak, where without Miller in the lineup, you take a pretty big hit in terms of your offensive talent, especially going against this team when they've got the 1-2 punch of, you know, Zibanejad and that center group with Trocheck and that line with Panarin, even though they were pretty quiet, it's still a threat every time they're on the ice. I thought, you know, through 40 minutes, they had it. And then in the third period, it was more of a, all right, you kind of, you know, one team steps it up, and all it takes is that one mistake, and that can end up in your back of your net, and that's exactly what happened in the third.
Yeah, the third period did feel kind of like they huffed and they puffed, yep. And they maybe ran out of steam, and the Rangers, partially because of the talent gap, but also they get the goal and they're like ready to lock up shop and just make it difficult. I don't think the third matched the second and the first.
No.
From Vancouver.
No, I'm with you on that too. And, you know, there were some good individual performances, right? Like, you know, that Pedersen, Sherwood, and DeBrusk line was the Canucks' best line tonight. And it's too bad the game-winning goal happens with them on the ice, too, because I thought they essentially had a flawless game up until that point. And let's just break that down for a moment because, you know, we talk about, you know, the effort was good tonight and sometimes the better team, you know, is going to find a way. They had a couple lucky bounces. The one Kakko goal goes off Susie's skate. I know people were frustrated at Susie, but to me that's just bad luck. And even the Cooley goal on the breakaway, it's, if Kakko doesn't touch that puck, doesn't change his trajectory, maybe doesn't get the breakaway. So I thought they got a couple of lucky bounces. But when it's 3-3 and situational defending, you can't be making the mistakes that happen. Now, and I think Pedersen's at fault here. Zibanejad makes a great play to knock the puck off Pedersen's stick. And I think Pedersen then gets a bit crossed up on, do I take Zibanejad? Do I take Kreider? He should have attached to Kreider. He doesn't. But I also thought Tyler Myers takes himself out of the play by trying to close out a hit. And you're completely out of the play at that point. Now, there's acres of space on the right side for the Canucks defense. And Susie, I don't know what he's trying to do. He goes down on one knee, and the next thing you know, Kreider comes in and finishes. I thought they were battling really hard. I just don't love that moment, right? I mean, you have Pedersen doesn't make a good play. Susie doesn't make a good play. Myers doesn't make a good play. Like, just to have that be the game-winning goal against you, to me, stings a little bit.
Yeah, there's a bit of a bad taste in your mouth because that line was having such a good game. We talk about the attacks and transition through the middle of the ice, and for Pedersen, you're right. You know, he makes the play defensively to come back on that play, break up the play, but Zibanejad does a heck of a kind of a rebound there.
Yeah.
It's not only Pedersen's mistake who loses his man, but to your point, Seth, there's a compounding of mistakes there. And that's where when the Canucks were playing their game last year really well defensively, you had the one mistake, but the next guy stepped up and said, all right, I'm not going to go searching for that hit like Tyler Myers. Or, you know, Carson Soucy got caught, as you mentioned, in an awkward position. there weren't the multiple mistakes on that one play where I think with Pettersson, you see that. And usually, like last year, we saw more of those guys lean in there and just say, all right, I'm going to play it safe. I'm going to protect the middle of the ice. We don't see it on that play. And that's why, to your point, I think 45 minutes of this game, 50 minutes of this game, it's a strong, strong effort from this team. But all it takes is one mistake against a good team, ends up in your back of your net.
And some against some great players, right? Yep. Mika Zibanejad, 50-goal scorer, and Chris Kreider, right? It's such small details that are going to matter. And Elias Pettersson knows better. Like, you do the hard bit of getting that puck away from Mika Zibanejad. You got to finish the play.
Yep. Yeah.
And his stick is still off the ice and just kind of floats reattaching to that puck, but you got to finish that, get back up the ice, and hold Zibanejad off. How often do we talk about or hear from Rick Tocchet just mentioning, you know, make plays with guys on your back and
yep.
be considerate of and value the puck in that spot? And he gets it picked, and it was, you know, nice exchange between a couple of nice Swedish centers who are also strong in the defensive side of the puck, but you can prevent that from even happening. And obviously, just as you said, Randy, just a compounding mistakes there.
Yeah, and it's such a weird conversation to have because everything else throughout the night for Elias Pettersson was strong, right? Being assertive through the middle of the ice.
Yeah.
We saw moments where he was engaged in those battles. In the second period, the Rangers clearly targeted him on two plays on the same shift, where in the defensive zone we saw a hit that wasn't penalized, and Braden Schneider eventually was on the other side of the ice. So there was a response by the Rangers to say, all right, if you're going to play this style of game, we gotta target you. And I thought Pettersson, for the most part, played really well. It's just that one play against elite players that can burn you.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of reaction on the text inbox, 650, 650. Erica and Burnaby says it's too bad they lost, but honestly was one of the better games the guys played considering everything that happened. And this one says, moral victory. Let's give the boys some love for gutting out a full 60.
Totally.
And
I don't know, man.
No, I'm with you.
Moral victories, like you just got 4 points out of 12 on your homestand.
I get
But this game in like isolation, it's a tough one.
Yeah,
I
get
it.
It's
a tough one.
But,
I get it.
Okay, we're talking about the now – talent gap that might open up if JT's out for a while, Brock's out, Demko's still out. So you need effort to win your games. How long do you think that motivation of we have to have the effort going all the time, is it going to last? And you need the results to keep that fire burning. When you don't get them in the early part of that this run here, when we're going to be missing bodies, suddenly you can just start saying, oh man, this is going to be so difficult.
Yeah.
All right, I'm not going to do it. We got a 6-game road trip coming up. I'm going to ease up here. You need results to kind of fire, to throw the logs on the effort fire. And when you don't get it, even though like it is a good effort tonight, I'm not disputing that. I'm not saying there aren't moral victories here, but you need the results too.
You do, but in this game specifically, and we talked about 2/3 of this game were strong with the Canucks. In the third period, whatever it is, they ran out of gas compared to this Rangers team. We also have to acknowledge that this Rangers team is going to be one of the best teams, if not the best team in hockey again, right? Like there is an element of they have home run hitting power. Even their third line was skating and skating and skating today. Like that's we use the word professional a lot. That's a professional team over there. Like they are
sure, but it's
night in, night out. I think not having that high end element to match, it hurts you to a certain extent. That's a lot of pressure in Pettersson. He better get used to it because we don't know how long JT Miller is going to be out. We don't know how long Brock Besser is going to be out. We don't know how long Thatcher Demko is going to be out. So there's going to be a lot of pressure and expectation on his shoulders. But I think just the way today went down and the opposition, if this was another team, if this was Nashville tonight, for instance, I'm with you. I think the opposition matters in this circumstance. They brought the effort. They just couldn't get the results. The
thing is, they made mistakes, though, right? If they just got flat-out beat and there was hard skating and all that, you could say, all right, they got beat. But, like, there were mistakes that they're in control of.
Yeah.
And to me, like, this does feel like a point missed, at least. If not, could they have done something greater? Because it's fine margins, but we're talking about not controlling a puck on the 4-3 goal. We're talking about Soucy in general on another play. A point was there to be had tonight.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing, the frustration. I mean, you came down, you came back from being a couple goals down on a couple of occasions in this game, right? And, you know, it's hard to battle back that often. You scored the first goal, then you're down 2-1, then you're down 3-2, you tie it up. And there's only so many deficits you can come back in one game against a team like the New York Rangers. So I understand the notion of a point missed, at least on the evening like this. Big picture-wise, I wasn't expecting them to win tonight's game, so I didn't come into from that aspect. Just, it's a bit tough to take. But I get fans, they like the effort and the fact that they, tonight they did lay it all out there. And as long as you play hard, you can accept the effort. what you don't want to do is lose too much ground. And we talked about the Canucks are now in survival mode until guys get healthy, you know. And I know there are people that don't have a lot of faith, like Derek, the disgruntled bus driver, thinks the Canucks are done for dinner and they don't have enough guys performing at a high level, and now they have injuries, concerned about making the playoffs. Others have the same concern. It's very early still. Again, like the Canucks, you know, are not in a spot where, you know, their playoff lives are in danger, but every game you lose, that margin goes away, right? And we talk about being above 500, 18 games, 21 points. This six-game road trip, you kind of have to find a way to get come away with it being 500. You know, we're talking about, let's say JT's not back and Brock and Demko are not back, and they might be during the road trip, but if they're not, that's seven games. And three out of three makes you 3-4. Still under 500, but every game you lose makes it harder for you to keep your head above water. So at some point, you got to start picking up results despite the injuries.
We came into November saying, okay, this was the easier stretch for them, right? The way the schedule lined up, and they go 5-4 so far in November, but obviously this homestand, not successful, not really close to being successful. And then this road trip is suddenly going to get challenging because of the absences. And so suddenly an easier part of the schedule is now looking a little daunting in quick order here. That, again, you're going to need these efforts all the time now. And going up against the Senators, the Bruins, who are imagining going to get a coach bump.
Coach bump, yeah. So, and even the Senators, they play hard.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's a team that's playing hard right now. The Penguins after that, that's a team that picked up a point against Tampa. Their coach, although he's pretty safe, like there's got to be a thought of a big move is coming next. So that's a team on edge right now. But, Bick, to your point, when you don't have that 1-2 punch, every matchup will be a tough one, right? You look at that Ottawa team, they're competitive right now. You look at Boston, they're going to be hungry. And they've got quality players that know they're underachieving right now. And even Pittsburgh, that 1-2 punch of Crosby and Malkin, it's still daunting. We've seen them at their best. So yeah. So without Miller, of course, that's a very, very difficult proposition. But, guys, yeah, you're going to have to grind out some victories here, right? And one area that I think the team, you can understand why they were disjointed, but it was the power play. You need that power play at some point to chip in with a goal there and help you out a little bit, because 5-on-5 will be a grind. You don't have that. You don't have that center that's going to drive play or be a great playmaker to the level of JT. So you have to make sure that you're getting something on the power play when you get the opportunity.
As far as net mining tonight, Artur Shilov's got the start. I don't know if you can blame him necessarily for the loss. I thought he made some good saves to tonight's game. I mean, he lost his blocker, and that gets dicey. You've seen goalies be very hesitant in that situation. Yep. He wasn't challenge shooters and was able to get the whistle. You know, I like that play from him, and I thought he did a lot of good things in the game. I'm not sure I love the first goal. And, you know, the point Bick and I were making, too, is there's a screen in front of him by Kreider. There's a nice tip by Zibanejad, right? And even if he was in proper position, maybe that puck goes in, finds the corner.
Yeah, he's a little too to the right there.
But by the time the shot comes by him, like, he's almost fully past the post, right? Yeah. And it's like you have to give yourself a bit of a chance. And on that one, I just didn't love it. And I thought a couple of times he kind of lost his net a little bit. It seems a bit adventurous. And again, like, I'm not saying you blame him for the loss. He made some good saves. But four still got past you, you know. And I'm just not sure his game's at a level right now that I feel comfortable with him playing too many NHL games.
Well, I think early on in this game as well, he was very active. You could see him kind of, you know, being aggressive on a lot of fakes. You could see him aggressive. Kind of, there was a couple of belly flop moments, which he's been known for as well. As the game went on, though, I think he settled in a little bit, and he wasn't maybe moving as much. But that's going to be the challenge with Shilov, right? You need him in the here and now. Kevin Lankinen is tired. This is a guy that, in Shilov's, is still building out his game. He's trying to build that confidence. And the Rangers, early on this game, were trying to get point shots through. They were trying to – Keandre Miller from that left-hand side was trying to see if they were challenging him. And he was battling a little bit better through those screens, so I think there's been improvement there. But in terms of activity in that blue paint, you're right. He's very aggressive on that front, and sometimes being overly aggressive can hurt you. I think that's a valid point on that first goal. Now, the big question, the elephant in the room is Thatcher Demko, right? Like, we all acknowledge that Artur Shilov has work to do, and I think the team acknowledges that as well, because there's a reason he wasn't playing that often. But we're just going to have to wait and see on the Thatcher Demko status. And hopefully in this next road trip, you're going to see Shilov once more, I would imagine, against either Boston or Pittsburgh. If he's, we know Thatcher Demko's taking the trip as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, Lankinen's going to get his games. But I think with Shilov, of course, there's there's not much you can really do on that front. You have to give them games because Lankinen's starting to feel it, guys.
Well, you know, Nate in Richmond says, Artie played well, Demko probably makes one more save. So I don't disagree. Having Demko probably makes a difference, but at the same time, you know, you are going to go through some injuries.
Yeah.
Well, the Demko we know from last year, right? But, like, what this Demko is this year, we don't know.
It's tough. I wouldn't blame any of the goals on Shelaw's, but, man, like, there are just moments where it is kind of an adventure where he just kind of loses the net. And the power play in particular, I think it was the one in the second period, the Hoglander penalty. He's really active and just moving around. You can see he's out of the net a couple of times. And it's more about process to me than results tonight, because again, I'm not blaming the goals on him, but I just wonder if some of these things we saw tonight show up moving forward, because he was better in Chicago, but this felt like the version we saw earlier in the season.
Yeah, it's higher degree of difficulty, right? Like Chicago, let's be honest, they're pretty lifeless.
Sure.
This is, you know, high-end players that are going to attack off transition. They're going to be, you know, going side to side with some of those guys that charge the middle of the ice too. He had to deal with Kreider. He had to deal with Trocheck going in the crease and in the blue paint. There's going to be a lot more. So if you're overly aggressive against these guys, they'll make you pay. So it still looks a little awkward, to your point. It looks like, all right, you're not getting burned, but I can see, you know, one extra pass and you might be getting burned.
On another night, like, this could have been 6-7 if things go a certain way, right? Because the mistakes he made, I feel like the Rangers didn't capitalize on them.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, that's true. Like I said, I didn't love the first goal, and we kind of talked about that. And again, even if he's in the right spot, maybe doesn't make that save. I just want to see the guy be a bit more centered in the goal and not kind of lose his crease as much as he has at times so far this season. On Soucy and Myers, so Carson Soucy only had more ice time than Noah Juulsen on the back end. He played 14:49 tonight. Noah Juulsen played 14:24. Brännström 15:48, and Tyler Myers played 18:04. Massive minutes for Quinn Hughes tonight. 28 minutes, 24:47 for Filip Hronek. So Carson Soucy, it really looks like the coach don't seem to have a ton of faith in his game right now, with his ice time being reduced that significantly.
Yeah, and this is a player that's really been fighting the puck this year, guys. When he is good, he's denying the zone. When he is good, he's breaking the cycle. When he is good, he looks like he could play, you know, the game in a rocking chair moving the puck. Just simple passes, not overdoing it. And even other times last year, we saw him skate the puck out of trouble as well. This year, that confidence is not quite there. And even today, it was he gets that unlucky bounce on the Cooley or the Kapo goal, excuse me. But, you know, this is a guy that hasn't found his rhythm this year. And when I look at that pairing of Myers and Soucy, of course, Myers hasn't had a great season either, but I think it's Carson Soucy right now. He's not that stabilizing force that he was last year through 40 games, and we saw in the playoffs as well.
What's weird, too, is I thought he started okay.
Yeah.
The first period was strong. He features it on the Sherwood goal. I thought, okay, there's a quick
harder
decision. He beats two guys to get that puck up the wall. So you think, all right, is that going to give you some confidence? And it really didn't at all, and the minutes certainly reflect that. Now this is a growing concern. It already was, but it seems like it's getting larger and larger as the minutes get smaller and smaller.
Before we get out here, Randy, I have a three-game road trip coming up. Starts on Saturday against the Ottawa Senators. How big is that road game? Like, it starts it off. The Boston Bruins haven't been great, but they made a coaching change. You would expect them to play with a bit more fire. Like, that first game on this road trip becomes really instrumental.
Six-game road trip.
Six-game. I thought I said five. Yeah, six-game road
three.
Trip.
Three.
Yep.
Did I say three?
Yeah.
We've been talking about the first
six,
three.
Yeah,
so,
I said six earlier, but yeah, anyway.
It's a long one, but that first game in Ottawa, guys, is a big one, right? Saturday night game. You're wanting to set the tone and really get some positivity. This has been a heavy season for this Canucks team, right? There's been a lot that they've had to deal with. They continue to deal with. You want to be in a situation where you're saying, all right, you know what? The game on Tuesday was a heavy day. You had to deal with a lot. There's a lot going on. Of course, you know, Connor Garland scores the goal. He's on baby watch as well. There's a lot of things you can focus on. But that first game on the road trip, just to be like, all right, you leave Vancouver, you leave a lot of that heaviness behind for now. Let's get started the right way. Pick up a good road win. And times like this, you can, you know, really, in a lot of ways, kind of leave everything at home to a certain degree. And the six-game road trip can work in your favor, too. If you get away from home and you're hanging out with the guys and you build up that positivity, but you need that first game in Ottawa to kind of set the tone. You don't want to be talking on Saturday night about a three-game losing streak and then heading into Boston, which is going to be a hungry team. So I think that game on Saturday night, guys, against Ottawa is a big one. You got to bring the effort, And I think special teams is going to be huge in that one as well.
Especially with so many days off. We're talking about one game from now to that Boston game, right? So you're 3 days off between Saturday. You're just stewing over this thinking, man, we got to get a win here. And then if you don't get that one, it's Sunday, Monday. There's another 2 days off, right? So it's tough. You really that Ottawa game really takes on heightened importance. And as I was mentioning, the effort's nice, but you got to get results to keep that effort going.
And guys, Brady Tkachuk, right? Like, this is a guy that attacks the blue paint. So when we talk about Soucy and Myers, that pairing is going to have to be strong, especially. And I think Hughes and Hronek obviously have aspects of their defensive game that they need to work on in certain elements too. But like, to me, if you're talking about length, size, and matching up against Brady Tkachuk and something that the Ottawa Senators team has to offer, they got to bounce back quick here, that pairing especially.
Yeah, absolutely. Randy, great stuff, man. Look forward to chatting with you coming up on this road trip, and hopefully the Canucks can keep their heads above water.
All right, guys. See you later.
That is Randy Janda, and that is the Great Game Review brought to you by BC Honda Dealers. Love a good save, then you'll love the all-new, all-electric Honda Prologue EV. Score up to $8,000 in combined rebates. Visit bchonda.ca. We are going to take more of your text messages on the other side, and we'll take more of your phone calls, 604-280-0650. But before we get out, Bic, what are the people saying on the text inbox?
650-650 into our Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. This one, there is some moral victory talk coming in here. Moral victory, let's give the boys some love for gutting out a full 60. CV from North Van says Connor Garland was a beast. Most entertaining home game so far. I don't know about that. They won some games or a game here on home ice. This one, Bill and Poco, Soucy, Myers, and Juleson with average goaltending is costing them points. This team needs a shakeup. And finally, Daniel and Camel River. Garland looking like Lanny McDonald with the duster. I don't know what it's. It's a decent comp.
It's okay. Not quite that.
It's a Hall of Fame.
That's a Hall of
Duster.
Yeah. Not quite that high. All right. Let's take one phone call before we hit the break, and let's go to Langley, where we have Lee on the line. Lee, thanks for calling in. And what are your thoughts here tonight after a tough 4-3 loss against the Rangers?
Hey guys. So I wasn't going into this game with much expectations. I think there was just way too much outside noise going into the game. So I kind of expected the Canucks to lose. But I thought the effort was there. There wasn't too many chances for the Canucks, but I think the chances that we did get were pretty high quality, I think. But unfortunately, two things can be true. And while the effort is good, results also need to be there. And for this upcoming road trip, I am a bit concerned. We have, like, injuries to Miller, Besser, Demko, even Forbert, like, Miller and Besser, they're really good players. There's just too many injuries to our top of our lineup. And then Demko, like, our goaltending is good, I think, but it's not anything that will, like, steal a game. For Soucy and Myers, I feel like at this point, like, I noticed this game, Dransom has played more minutes, and, like, Soucy's minutes really went down, but I think we need, like, in this next upcoming road trip, like, really push Soucy's minutes down. Like, even though Branson, we're not sure if we could trust him with minutes, I just can't think it could be any worse right now for Soucy. So, yeah, that's all I have to say. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for the phone call, Lee. And we'll see with the ice time. Like we mentioned, low man in ice time tonight. And, you know, somebody was making the point. We talked about this earlier. We'll break down the goals a bit more. But somebody said, and I'll see if I can find this text message here. Too many individual mistakes tonight. And on the game-winning goal, this one says, Pettersson wins a draw, clean. Soucy gets the puck and grenades it off the glass, gives possession right back to the Rangers. They come right back and they score. Now, we talked about there are a number of mistakes there, but, you know, that Myers-Soucy pair is having a lot of trouble. And, you know, we'll talk about what some of the options are. Can you go away from it? Can you play other guys more? Are there options down in the minors? We'll get into that a lot more after a 4-3 Canucks loss on home ice against the Rangers. It's Satya Shaw with Bic Nizar. Keep getting your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And you are listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Like Kubota, do you have heavy lifting? listing. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. More coming up next on Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the Morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts and don't miss an episode. This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Trouba back to the puck, gets it from Lindgren, passes ahead for Riley Smith. Dumped it to the Vancouver line. Chris Kreider goes left boards for Zibanejad. Now to Smith in the slot, left wing, Kreider to the net, he scores! A tremendous goal by Chris Kreider as the Rangers move the puck around off the rush into the Vancouver end. And they retake the lead at 4-3 with 9:17 left in the third period.
And this play starts at the Canucks' blue line. Elias Pettersson gives up the puck, which Kreider and Zibanejad combine to take the puck away from him. And then Kreider just drives the net. Pettersson doesn't follow him, so Chris Kreider is all by himself and snipes right-hand side low to the ice to beat Shelov. So Pettersson with an initial good play defensively to try to win back the puck, but then he loses his man, and he's the one who ends up scoring.
Canucks lose 4-3 on home ice against the New York Rangers, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. A lot of takes coming in. OP from Fleetwood says, adversity makes teams better, and I'd rather the team go through it now than later on in the season. This upcoming road trip is great timing for the boys to rally together. So OP from Fleetwood taking the optimistic approach to this game here tonight.
Yeah, certainly. Take what you can from it. I get it. Just the moral victories thing that we were chatting about earlier. I like this text from Nick. It's a tough game, but I don't feel like the Rangers played great. And the Canucks capitalized on their opportunity to stay in the game, but the Rangers too good to beat without your A-plus effort. Shout out to Sherwood, who in my mind deserved the star over Petey. He sure looks like he belongs. So it's good to know he can play in a top six role when needed. And that's the bit. I think the Rangers jumped on the Canucks in key moments and, you know, had some high dangers. But I think they can play better. So if you weren't getting a 9 out of 10 performance from the Rangers, if it slipped a little bit, that's an opening. Can you close that gap from talent and with effort? And we mentioned in the third period it wasn't as sharp, but they made mistakes throughout the game to just give the Rangers an edge.
Yeah, and they took advantage, certainly did. Now, the Rangers had a couple, again, lucky things to go their way, but they also took the game to the Canucks in key situations, and that's one of the reasons why they won the game. But they had a chance. I saw Tom on X was replying, saying, excellent effort, disappointed Tocchet made them start the third in defensive shell. This happens a lot, that it gets brought up when the Canucks are more passive. Is it a directive from the head coach, or is it how the team just reacts? I know he's mentioned in the past he wants teams to push forward and not, you know, be overly reliant on just sitting back, but being undermanned, I can't speak for the coach. I don't know if that's something they coach, though. Like, I don't think they want them to sit back like that.
Yeah, I get it. I wonder if it took on a feel of, like, the bubble series versus Vegas, where, like, hey, we're so undermanned and we're so outclassed here, let's just try to dwindle down the clock to play a one-shot game.
Yeah.
And when you got it to 3-3, we chatted about that in the second intermission, would you have taken a tie game going into the final 20 minutes? Probably.
You would take the tie game, yeah. Right? Yeah. So, you know, something perhaps the coach will hit here. And let's get to the head coach. Let's go to the podium with Rick Tocchet, brought to you by Tiletown.
Rick, in light of today's news and the bodies you have out of the lineup tonight, what did you take away from your group's performance?
We played really hard tonight. You know, they made the plays they made at the end. Came down to a couple of plays, but I thought we played hard.
Talked to Elias. We could tell he was pretty frustrated on the play, on the game-winning goal. What did you make of his play overall tonight and his Lions play as well?
Yeah, they played hard, like everybody. They all played hard. But, you know, like they said, they made a couple of, you know, key goal. You know, there was a key goal, right? They made the play they had to make.
Rick, when you think about what your group has been through 17 games, it's not a large sample of games, but when you think about all the real, like, off-ice personal stuff, Dakota,
yeah.
Derek,
yeah.
Thatcher, Brock, and now this today, what have you learned about your group? What are you seeing from your group? How difficult has it been as a coach through this?
Well, it's things that you got to overcome, adversity, and it's the stuff we went through last year, too. You know, Well, I love this because, you know, we're going to get some bodies back. I thought there was a step. I thought guys played harder tonight. So certain guys I thought played harder, which is a good thing that we need from them. And then you just, you know, you use fuel. People that doubt you or the noise, it's to me, it's stuff that I love. That's what galvanizes a group. So take that energy that we have in the room. You know, we're going to have some bodies coming back. I don't know, you know, whether it's a week, 2 weeks, or some all-star people. That's going to help. But in the meantime, some guys are getting some playing time, and they're getting used to these kind of pressure games. 3-3 game, 3-4 minutes, where am I supposed to be in certain spots? I think that that's valuable stuff.
With what you saw tonight, are you able to separate the disappointment of sort of one game in the individual context with sort of the bigger picture of if you play like that, even if you're shorthanded, right, a 40-goal scorer, a top center, a Vezina-caliber goaltender, you're still going to be able to stay afloat, right, maybe even play and win games?
I'm disappointed in the Islander game, but I'm not disappointed in Nashville in this game because we played – Nashville never had one – didn't get a chance in the third period. So I told the guys, yeah, the PK let us down, whatever, but they were good tonight. I mean, they got a great power play, one of the best in the league. So we dug in there. So that's a step. But I thought the last two games we played hard, you know, just couldn't make that key play, right? You know, it's a Banajek. They made the key play. We didn't tonight. That's what it comes down to, key plays, and we didn't do them the last couple of games. So we'll learn from that.
Can you talk about what you see Dave Sherwood over these first 18 games of the season?
Yeah, just, you know, he's just a passionate guy. We need guys like that. You know, he comes to the rink every day, practice. He plays like it's a privilege to play in the NHL, and he's got an opportunity here that maybe he didn't have much as a natural, like whatever, to show, like he told me this summer. I mean, I remember talking to him on a Sunday morning. He was going to shoot pucks in a garage, you know, and because he knows there's offense to him game, and, you know, I don't know how many points he had last year, but has he got more this year? Or like it's 18, you know, he's close, but I'm saying he can play. So good for him. We need a lot of guys like that. Contagious.
And you said earlier today that you wanted that extra 5-10% out of your guys. Is that what you're talking about seeing in tonight's
game? Yeah, I thought most of the guys gave more effort, you know, they really tried hard. I thought our changes were better. Cost us the game last game, but I thought today the changes were good. I thought we had some good changes. Like I said, I thought some guys did a nice job, worked hard tonight for us.
What do you think of Connor Garland? Obviously, an eventful day for him.
Yeah, he's going to probably have a baby here soon. What was up at 3 in the morning, was up again at 7, no sleep, and, you know, it's our best player. So, you know, what can you say? You know, you love the kid.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet after a tough 4-3 loss on home ice against the New York Rangers, and that is brought to you by Tiletown. From vision to reality, Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. And, you know, the coach wasn't going to take a critical approach here. And honestly, like, one of the things we talked about on the show today before and pregame, when you're this undermanned, the only thing you can do is just rally your guys. It kind of becomes a survival mode. You just have to find a way to survive. You have to get the most out of your players, and all you can sell them on is the big picture, right? Like he mentioned, hey, guys are getting experience right now that can help them later, fight through adversity now. Like, those are all the selling points you have coming into the game. And despite the fact that I'm sure there are things he didn't like, and I'm sure there are things that he wants to see them do better, I think the approach right now is build the guys up and not be critical, especially with how many guys are out of the lineup.
Yeah, but is it rallying the guys to say, like, good effort, but we're getting some all-stars coming back here pretty soon? We're, like, those are the guys that are really going to do it.
Well, that doesn't make sense to me as a critique.
But you're talking about rallying the players here, right, and then you're also talking about, like, hey, the guys that are going to help us win are also coming back here really soon.
Well, like, I mean, that's just the fact. I mean, you're talking about you have to find a way to survive until guys come back. That's just the reality.
But
like, what do you don't say, like, oh, we're going to be fine. We don't need these guys.
But that's admission to me that, like, yeah, just put, like, you guys are more like put in the effort players rather than like help us win players. And if it's survival right now, what's the point of survival if not like, to get points?
Yeah, I don't know though, man. Like, so Rangers coming in have what? One of the best point percentage in the league, one of the best point percentages in the league.
But there's still
teams.
A stretch of time here before some of those guys come back.
Yeah, but I mean, I thought, again, like,
but we're talking about, like, hey, we're getting valuable time here?
But what are you supposed to say? Like, honestly, like, what, well, you have Ratu in the lineup, you have Lekkomäki in the lineup, you have Susi and these guys struggling, you see the minutes for
I just think the pairing of those two statements, to me, don't matter. Like, you can say all the stuff of, like, valuable stuff, but then to say, like, oh, we're getting our guys back, though. That, to me, is, like, kind of unnecessary.
Well, I mean, just, I mean, you're talking to the media about, like, you know, you're saying we just got to fight through this, get
through
what we can.
But you're talking about, like, the certain guys playing hard tonight.
Yeah.
And then mentions in the same sentence that, like, we're getting some guys coming back here. That again, like, this is the conversation about moral victories that we're talking about here.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I disagree, if I agree with that, because, like, I again, like, I don't think the approach you take in a game like this is you're trying to sell your guys on, hey, we got to fight through this, do whatever we can, and then if that means certain guys get sent down, hey, at least you got this experience now, you help us down later on. Like, I think that's the only way you can approach this. Like, I think if you take the, like, I don't think you can lie to these guys. Like, oh, yeah, you guys are gonna be fine, man. We're gonna carry this team. I don't think you can lie to them. And then I think as far as the game goes, you can tell he's frustrated, but I don't think you want to go out in the media.
It's a night when he repeats himself a lot, it feels like those are the nights he's really frustrated. And there was a lot of, like, we played really hard tonight, and give the Rangers their credit.
Yeah.
Give the Rangers their credit. I mean, there was plenty of that.
I'm sure if you sit him down afterwards and speak honestly, there are a lot of things he won't like. But when you kind of are trying to build us against the world mentality, you're kind of trying to build, I think it's, you're going to survival mode. Like, I get it. I think it's not about being dishonest. I think it's more about you're trying to sell the guys on something at this point. And that's all you can do to get the most out of these guys. Like even when the Canucks are doing their best, they're still, like, not the better team. Like, what was the overall scoring chance differential tonight? It's still pretty lopsided.
I want to say it was 9-8 or 9-7.
7-6, actually. 5-6. Yeah.
That feels light.
That feels kind for the Canucks. Now, obviously, on the total attempts and expected goals, it was still heavily, like, expected goals were almost 63% in the Rangers' favor. Again, not a perfect stat always, but you know, there's only so much you can do, I think, in a game like this, and I'm not sure you can take that overly aggressive approach post-game on the guys.
650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. This one, if I'm a fringe player belly aching about it, then is my control to step up my game? That one is coming in from Tyler, 650. Raymond, Bixom's really affected by this loss. No, I'm just... It's not necessarily concerned about, like, what this team can be. It's not concerned about, because I still believe this team is going to the playoffs. But we're talking about a far higher bar
for what this
team is supposed to accomplish this season.
For sure.
And we're at game 18, and we haven't really seen anywhere close to, like, what the bar is supposed to be. And I understand, like, some guys have been out, but at some point you are supposed to, like, push the tempo. And last year they had that nice opening season stretch, 10-1-2. They had a 13-1-2 stretch. Like, it's going to have to be incumbent upon them to, like, do one of those stretches at some point in the season, and it's just going to get harder and harder and harder now.
Yeah, I just don't know if it's realistic. Like, I'm with you. Like, and I saw somebody texted in, too. It's like, they said, because of how poorly the Canucks have played on home ice, like, I can't just forgive this one, and I totally understand that. But your roster is what it is right now, right? Like, you know, it kind of is what it is. And did the Canucks have any push outside of the Pettersson line? I know Garland and
well, the Bluger line really struggled.
Really struggled. Even Garland and Joshua. Like, the only Canucks line tonight that had his head above water was the Pettersson line. That's it. Everybody else got crushed 5-on-5. Like, there's only so much I think you have right now as far as your team is. And to me, it's like you just got to survive until guys get healthy. And at that point, again, like, you're right. We don't know
survive.
500. Like, from this point until guys get healthy.
Okay, well, they didn't get a point tonight.
Well, yeah, but 500 means you lose one, you win one. It's the first game. You look it over the six-game road trip. But like I mentioned, like, over the six-game road trip.
If they go 2-4 on this road trip, mm-hmm. are we going to look at it differently? Like, hey, boy, that moment in against the Rangers, like, that was the start of this. Like, at some point, you have to recognize, like, when the urgency picks up. You can't just go 2-4 and say, well, now we got to be way better and go on this 10-1-2 stretch.
Well, nobody said that. I said be 500 until guys get healthy. This was the first game you lost it. I wasn't expecting them to win this game here tonight. Like, you know what I mean? I didn't look at this game and say, oh, boy, you got to beat the Rangers. If you don't beat the Rangers tonight, man, I really don't know about this team. Like, that's not how I came into this game. Over the course of until guys get healthy, be 500. That means you lose one, you win one. If you are if they're, say, 2-5 in these seven games – that'll be bad.
But
it's bad.
It's like, one thing for you to say that, like, you don't expect it. Do you think they come in and be like, man, we're outgunned tonight?
Yeah, but I mean, my job isn't to coach the guys. It's to analyze what I'm seeing. Like, that's, you know, I'm not.
But that's what I'm talking about with moral victories. Like, we can chat about moral, but for them, like, moral victory shouldn't exist for them.
But it's not about moral victories. You just said I liked their effort. tonight. I mean, and that's the thing. You can have a good effort and not be happy with the result. I don't know. I mean, I just don't see it as being problematic necessarily with how you go about this. This one says, who are their best players? The Lions are not comparable to other teams, and they're losing the playoff positioning. They are losing the playoff
positioning. Well, the best players are Miller, Demko, Besser, and they're all out of the lineup. It's not difficult to figure out who he's talking about.
Oh, no, I think he has on the team, so it's Pedersen too, right? So there's Pedersen, there's Hughes, there's Hronek. I think Hronek – I actually liked Hronek's defensive game. I haven't seen too much of his top end the last little while. He had a couple struggles tonight. I saw some good things.
Yeah, but he had a three-game stretch where he and Hughes really toppled the ice, and he was feeding the puck everywhere, but it has waned here recently, certainly for Hronek. Dude, man, that penalty is it's mistakes like that where we chatted about, the Rangers to me, were good, but not as strong as they can be, and there were openings to take advantage of. Not putting yourself on the power play is a huge mistake in that moment. Dakota Joshua taking a penalty in the offensive zone.
Why Hoglander's
totally unnecessary,
call too, right? But again, the coach is right. Their PK was solid tonight. That's not what lost them the game. Wasn't the penalty kill, but it's more about your fine margin for error. You can't lose the advantages that you have, right? And I think that's part of the reason. This text came in earlier and said, "What does it say here?" I can't find it now, but it's pretty funny. It says, this post-game feels like when you found out your parents are getting divorced, but you act like nothing has happened and ask, what's for dinner?
Oh, you and me?
No, I don't know if that's the case, but maybe it is.
I don't know. It's just like, ladies and gentlemen, they went 4-12 on a homestand.
4-12?
Sorry, 4 of 12.
4 of 12, yes.
4 of 12. Oh, then we really
panicked. Wait, they had a 12-game homestand?
4 points in 12 games. That's not good. And we keep talking about it's a long season, it's a long season, it's a long season. Each game that goes by, it's getting shorter.
No, I don't disagree about that. I don't disagree.
And honestly, worse teams have made the playoffs with less.
Made the playoffs, sure, but playoff teams still lose games.
I'm just saying. We were talking as if, it was impossible to win tonight. No, it's possossible. They were in it. It's 3-3 going into the third. They had moments throughout the course of the game.
I'm disappointed. So, we just broke down how bad the bad. I'm just saying, from the coach's perspective, I can understand what all he's trying to do is rally these guys now when the injuries have hit. All you can do is try to survive. The Canucks have to play a great game to win this one, right? They played as well as they could outside of making some mistakes. And they
still
lost
as well as he could if he made mistakes.
But mistakes happen in a hockey game, Big. You're going to make mistakes. Show me one game that was 60 minutes that never ended.
Fall into a trend of it'd be one thing if they were isolated mistakes, though. These are trend mistakes that are happening over and again. It's Soucy and Myers, right? It's penalty. These are trend mistakes that are happening now. Yeah. And that, to me, is a concern on top of everything else.
But the Soucy and Myers thing has been a concern even when they're healthy, right?
It's not being rectified. It continues to keep happening. So they speak to bigger problems, too.
Yeah, but, I mean, again, what can you expect from Soucy? He played 14:49 tonight. So, okay, solutions. So you're not going to play Soucy. What are you going to do? So Brännström played a bit more tonight. Again, okay, mm-hmm. So what do you do? Do you bench Soucy when Forbert comes back?
I don't even know what's about benching. But I'm just really curious, what is going on with Carson Soucy? That to me is an overwhelming thing of, it's now, 18 games, 2 months into the season? 7 weeks into the season? And it hasn't really improved. It's regressed, to be honest, because it didn't start great, and it's regressed as it has gone on. And I don't know if sitting him is the idea here, because it would, as you said, it would lead to lesser talent coming into the lineup. But when is the interjection point for this coaching staff to fix this? How come it hasn't get?
You break them up? You mean
break them up or? I don't know. So some sort of intervention in. I'm not behind the bench there, but is there a lack of resources being applied to solving the issue?
Yeah, I don't know if there is anything you can do to give a guy confidence. The same conversation we had with Pedersen, right? It's you work with him and try to get out. If you believe in a player, you let him play his way through it. But when it becomes this problematic. Do you need to sit him a game? I'm genuinely wondering if that's what you have to do. I'm not sure DPD, Elias Pedersen.
Yeah, there was a text earlier where it can't get any worse. I kind of think it could if you switch it out with a young player.
To me, the biggest one of the biggest fallacies in life is the notion of rock bottom. things can always get worse. Like, yeah. Like, oh, can I? No, they can't. Trust me, things can always find a way to get worse. But yeah, I mean, it's getting really tough. Like, I don't know how to justify him still playing, right? Or, you know, he played 15, 14, 49 tonight. I'm just not sure how much, what else you can do outside of taking him out of the lineup in a game like this.
650. I can't keep up with all the texts right now because people are just worried about us. We're okay, ladies and gentlemen. We're fine.
I told people before, if somebody asked the question to one of our mailbags a few weeks ago and said,
Basketball Phil, then tagged me like, hey, Sat said it would be you.
Yeah, he asked the question, who are you most likely to fight out of your coworkers? I'm like, it's definitely Bic.
Yeah, and he tagged me, he's like, would you say the same? I was like, yeah, 100%. 100%.
Absolutely. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650, 650. J-Dog says, don't sit Susie, trade him. The thing is, when people say this all the time when a player struggles, like, what do you think teams are going to give you for a player when he's struggling? You can't trade guys when they're at their absolute lowest. Would I put it past this front office to include a player in a bigger trade? No, I wouldn't. Like, you know, if something came down the pipe and they had to make a move and they had to shift money out, could he be part of it potentially? Sure. But this notion of just trading Susie away, I don't think that's really in the cards.
I don't think so either, but I like the text like that because it's a believable outcome with the idea of this regime in charge, right? They operate like it's the Wild West. They're willing to shoot their shot on anything. And the fact that they've shown as well, Sat, on their signings, that they will admit, okay, we got to cut bait on this and just change it, right? Sprong, obviously the most recent example. I know they give a 3-year contract to Susie.
Yeah.
It goes well last season. But if they're looking at this and saying, like, you know what? We do have to go achieve things, and we just can't wait. Because as we mentioned, like what are the solutions? If they don't have solutions on the bench to figure it out, and if he's not making it work on the ice to figure it out, the next spot is the executive's level. Mm-hmm. So where are you going to find the solutions? And if it's a one-in, one-out kind of thing, it doesn't have to be like the acquiring team takes on Susie, you get the player you want. It could just be whatever. Like, you send it here, we go. Because this team does like to do set up for the next move.
Yeah.
Again, I don't think it's something that's going to happen. I think Carson Soucy is very much part of the plan. But this regime, like, all cards are on the table, basically, for Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin.
Yeah, absolutely. I think these are people in the front office that are not afraid of making bold decisions and bold moves, and we'll see if that happens. You know, as far as time goes, it's just, are we at the time now where deals can be made? That's kind of the bigger question, too, around the National Hockey League. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650, 650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Okay, let's take one phone call before we hit the break. We come back on the other side. And let's go to Coquitlam, where we have Gord on the line. Gord, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey guys. I didn't listen to the first part of the show, but all I want to say is I'm not your guys' therapist calling in here. Okay, I don't know what's going on between you two guys. All I want to say is, you know, I was at the game. I was pleased with the Canucks overall, their compete level. And I think we've got a lot of stuff to work out. And we've got a lot of injuries to get back. Demko, Besser, well, you know it. Getting Miller back and the whole bit. We don't really have our full team. We play an 82-game schedule for a reason. And as long as by U.S. Thanksgiving, by Christmas, we can get everybody back, playing top, and everyone getting on their game over December and January, the important part is we have to peak coming into the playoffs. That's what really matters. As long as they play a good, you know, January, February, March, that's what matters. All we got to do is keep our heads above water and just stay in a playoff position for now. That's really it.
Hey, Gord, question for you.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm with you. Obviously, you get hot at the right time in April and in May, of course. Do you, because, like, I think there's a fine line between peaking and flipping the switch, because you do have to see the peaks at some point during the season, and that would be part of my concern, that by game 40 you kind of have to see a peak, and we're at game 18, we haven't seen a peak.
No, that's true, and I don't know enough about this to say when that should happen, but yeah, you're right, by around mid-season, game 40, game 50 at the most, we got to get our act together. But all I'm saying is we got time. And we have a lot of variables that have worked against us with injuries. And you know what? That happens to every team throughout the year. I would rather have these issues now in the beginning, staying in a playoff position, and then statistically, you know, things won't get worse injury-wise, you know, statistically. We get it all sorted out, and then we're good. Every team goes through this. Last year, at this time, roughly at this time, I think our scoring stats, you know, when they keep all those advanced stats, I think in the first 10, 15 games, we were scoring higher than the Edmonton Oilers were with the Gretzky, you know, in the Gretzky era. That wasn't reasonable. It's all going to come down. Everything statistically evens out, right? Work it out now. Just working all this stuff out now in the next 20 games. And if we can, we're okay. If we can't, then that's a different story.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. That's Gordon Coquitlam calling in. And like my thing is, we've been talking about every single game, and I haven't liked what the Canucks have done so far. Like they've gotten points so far. They've been able to be fine in the standings, but they've shown nowhere near their peak. They haven't shown anywhere near their complete game. But to me, your reality changed the moment JT went out. You already had injuries, but now I think you're undermanned so critically from your high-end players. It's kind of triage survival. It's like try to find a way to get through this until guys get healthy and then try to reassess and rebuild your game. Is that going to change the timeline for when we see the peak of this team? Potentially, because now we're talking about however long until guys get back and get up to speed again. And the question just does become, at what point do you show your peak and do you have that within you? I just don't know if we can... It's a realistic expectation over the course of this current stretch with guys being out the way they are. It's kind of like, I mentioned this on the show, coming into this game, survive. Find a way to be around 500 when guys come back, and hopefully you can find your game from that point. But that's kind of it. Like, I just don't know. Like, I can't sit here and be like, I got to see their peak tomorrow.
It just feels really tricky, though, because, you're right. I get it, but... So let's say it takes another 10 games for everyone to come back. Is that too many games?
No, I mean, be fair. Could be
so
fair.
Then we're at game 28.
Yeah.
Okay. Then some of those guys aren't going to be perfect right away, right? Like we're still kind of watching Dakota Joshua come back. So then let's add another 7 games, let's say.
Yeah.
Probably bare minimum. Okay. 7 games for guys to get up to speed. So now we're up to game 35, right? So now the season's like to hit a peak. That stretch is really like 50 games here.
I know, but that's the hand you're dealt. Like, I don't know if we can see this team's peak until guys come
back. But the idea
back.
Of, like, waiting, it's like, oh, don't worry. Like, our best version is coming later. And that's assuming, like, hey, everything still goes well, and then you're able to play at a level that nothing's going to go wrong in that stretch, where something's inevitably going to go wrong now in game 60.
Well, of course, but, like, cooked then?
And hopefully, that's the thing.
It should underline
the urgency necessary for like this stretch now that you want these guys firing. So it's not like, hey, we did just enough. Now come rescue us.
Yeah, but I don't think you can dictate. I think you have a talent discrepancy now that will not allow you to be the better team even if you play hard. Like that's just the reality of where you are with your like again like the Canucks worked super hard tonight. Every line,
but isn't
worked
that
their
you saying that cooked? Because it's like, oh, the talent. Talent discrepancy is so hard that it's just like, what are we going to do tonight?
Well, no, I think against certain teams, you only can get certain results. Like, do you think this team, as it's built, is good enough over 6 games to consistently outchance and outplay their opposition? Like, to me, the better team being like, you outchance and outplay your opposition.
On like, a night like tonight, it's like that game was winnable.
Winnable, but did they have enough to outchance and outplay the opposition? They were nowhere close to outchancing and outplaying the opposition. They worked hard. They should have had a point. Mm-hmm. They let that slip through their hands. But I don't think anybody agrees at any point this game they were the better team.
They worked hard, but we started the postgame show talking about, like, hey, they should have been better in the third. They didn't work as hard in the third.
100%.
So, like, effort has to be, like, the
but
bare minimum baseline.
But your point is peak, right? I think this roster with these deficiencies is incapable of peaking.
On Gord's point, though, like they do have to show a peak at some point. Like,
I agree.
Things, but like
it has to happen at some point. I agree.
Because I worry about that flip the switch mentality.
Yeah, I don't think that exists. I'm with you. I just don't.
Because that's tough.
Again, I just can't expect this roster to look like it's going to peak until the guys get healthy. That's it. We'll get more of your text messages, more of your thoughts on the other side. We'll play some player audio as well. We'll hear what they have to say after the game. Some frustration for Canucks players after losing 4-3 against the Rangers. You are listening to the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Find them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
As Riley Smith tips it in on Shelov, he'll leave for Susie's side of the goal. Rims it around the dasher, far wall for Kiefer Sherwood. He'll pass to center for Elias Pettersson. Chance for a 3-on-2. Pettersson to the Ranger line, right circle. Sherwood scores! Kiefer Sherwood fires home his fifth of the season. And the Canucks are back in a tied hockey game. It's 2-2.
And the Canucks show that they have a transition attack as well.
You know, he's just a passionate guy. We need guys like that. You know, he comes to the rink every day, practice. He plays like it's a privilege to play in the NHL, and he's got an opportunity here that maybe he didn't have much as a natural, like whatever, to show. Like he told me this summer, I mean, I remember talking to him on a Sunday morning. He was going to shoot pucks in a garage, you know, and because he knows there's offense to him game, and, you know, I don't know how many points he had last year, but has he got more this year? Or like it's 18, you know, he's close, but I'm saying he can play. So good for him. We need a lot of guys like that. Contagious.
Canucks head coach Rick talking on Kiefer Sherwood to score tonight, his fifth goal of the season for the Vancouver Canucks. In vain, though, losing 4-3 against the New York Rangers. Great night, though, for that line with Pettersson, DeBrusk, and Elias Pettersson. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. We do have a lot of reaction on the text inbox, Bick, and one here is from this one, and a lot of others have sent in this message too, is Tarek in Kingston, but others have asked, can we talk about Jake DeBrusk? Shoots the puck right at the goalie's crest on 2-on-1, making a play to no one with the goalie pulled. Has got to be better. That's Tarek in Kingston, Ontario, on Jake DeBrusk. And Jake is still obviously trying to find his game and find his place here in Vancouver. And he is a guy who does have a good shot. He's a guy that has been a pretty high-volume shooter in his career. Hasn't been as much here in Vancouver. Now, he had two shots on goal tonight, which for him, so far for his Canucks tenure, is a bit, you know, higher than sometimes what you see. But
Two attempts, too. That's
yeah,
the other thing.
You know, it worked out. Both got on goal. Kiefer Sherwood, though, I mean, he had seven shots on goal, and he had a couple of hits, three hits. So, no, sorry, Kiefer Sherwood had 10 hits and seven shots on goal tonight. 10 hits, another 10 hit.
Nine, it's been adjusted.
Oh, they adjusted
Oh, you know what,
down?
They just adjusted to 10. There you go. My bad.
So 10 hits and seven shots. Jake DeBrusk, two shots, two hits. And I thought he did a good job overall with the line, because that line was dangerous. But he's had a number of high-end opportunities that he's either just missed the net on, flubbed on, or just hit the goalie's crest. Like, he doesn't look like a threat to score when he has the puck right now.
His chance on the left flank was very similar to the Sherwood goal as they were entering on the right flank. And, yeah, it just goes right into the crest. And even some moments of going back to the Nashville game and then this one, like, really in tight, and the goalie gets on top of him fast, fighting it in a big way. I understand the skepticism. The thing is, it's like he is getting in good spots. And just in general, I do think at some point there's going to be a flood of goals. I don't know if he gets 30 now this year, but – you know, your phrase is a 20-goal scorer doesn't score in how many games?
At least 60 games.
So, like, he might be like a Tanner Pearson streaky type player.
He might
very
well be.
Which we saw, like, 9-game runs where it's like, well, Tanner Pearson can't stop scoring right now.
Yeah, and part of the reason why, you know, DeBrusk wasn't high on my list when we talked about the offseason and was because he's not a high-end producer. He's not a needle-moving forward. He's a second line scoring winger who can help you out, and he's a good solid bet to have on your team. He's going to help you out, but he's not a star difference maker. The Canucks gave him a 7-year deal at $5.5 million, which, hey, for 20 goals and playing 16, 17 minutes a game, fair, right? But the hope had been, can they get him to become something else? to become something greater, more consistent? Can he become a 30-goal guy and play up your lineup a bit more? It's still, what, 18 games into his NHL Canucks career, has a 7-year deal, and maybe we don't see the best version of him until down the road. But unless he becomes something bigger, then, you know, I don't like making 7-year investments on guys who are just second-line score. You can find those guys, right? So it's, you know, they really need him to become more than he is. It's still early in his tenure. It takes time for these things sometimes. But yeah, so far, he has not been the player you had hoped that he would be.
I think you and I were kind of locked up in this in the summer. See, folks, we are locked up on some things.
Some things, yes.
in the summer that it's not that we're against the signing. It's that, like, this was going to be your banner. Like, hey, the Canucks signed Jake DeBrusque. That's the headline, and that's what the big summer improvement is. Obviously, they, you know, the Gensel flirtation happened. If you were able to do both of them, or if you prioritize that one, it's like that's the one. That's the one that independently on his own, Jake Gensel is gonna produce offense. And when they made this signing and nothing came thereafter, for me, it shifted the focus off of Jake DeBrusque, which is a nice signing, and I think he's a decent player, and he'll have success here, and he'll live up to the value of the contract. But to me, like, the focus shifts onto Elias Pettersson. If the intention was to be Pettersson and DeBrusque paired together, it's going to be incumbent upon Pettersson to draw that out of DeBrusque. If you were going to get value out of the contract, you know, I think Jake DeBrusque on his own can probably get to 20 goals, but to get to 35, it's going to put a lot of pressure on Elias Pettersson. And we're sitting here talking about, hey, how does Elias Pettersson look? Like, he's still going through it himself, and I don't think we've seen that 10 out of 10 stretch from Elias Pettersson.
No.
So you're kind of in this murky spot where, like, well, is Jake DeBrusque going to do it on his own? Kind of not really. Like, he's got 3 goals so far. The pace is kind of on pace for like an 18 to 24 goal season.
I mean, he didn't even score 20 goals last year, did he? He finished, what was it, 19 last year?
Yes.
You know, so it's not, you know,
27 the year before. Yeah, he scored 27 before.
He's missed some games too, yeah. But like, you know, he is a guy who has scored fewer than 20. You know, it's not like, you know, he's guaranteed to get 20, right? And that's kind of where he's at. And as far as Pettersson is concerned, I mean, he extends his point streak to 3 games now, and he now has 8 points in his last 6 games. So his production's coming along. And right now, to me, Bick, and this is not a slight at DeBrusque, maybe more of a compliment to Sherwood, but to me, Sherwood looks more dangerous next to Pettersson than DeBrusque does.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you're chucking as much rubber as he is right now.
And he's getting to his spots, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing I like about him is he has, like, even on the breakaway chance he had and he almost scored on it, he made a nice move, too, to get away from the defender. I think it was Trouba, right? I forget who it was, but he's trying to get away from the defender, gets a nice breakaway chance, doesn't finish the opportunity, but he just plays a straight-ahead game and just gets to the right spots. And to me, that's something sometimes all you need to do, and the aggressiveness he plays with is just really contagious for this hockey team.
I did get a message today, be like, man, he's only signed for 2 years.
Only, yeah. I mean, it's a bargain.
He's endeared himself real fast.
Well, I mean, when you throw 100 hits in 16 games, yeah, it's kind of hard not to endear
but
yourself.
But there's production to it. July 1st, the priority is Kiefer Sherwood. He's eligible for an extension on that day.
This one says, maybe the Canucks should have traded for Gensel's rights. I think it goes beyond those things. I think when a team trades for their rights,
you know you're signing.
Yeah, and once Tampa cleared the space, they didn't bring Stamkos back, and they made a move too. They made the Sergachev move and moved him off the roster. And all of a sudden, they went from having no cap space to having $10 million
in cap
space.
They brought in McDonough though too.
Yeah, the way they shifted their money out, like they had space, and once they became a player with Gensel, I think they just became the team he wanted to go to. And you know, we had this chat in the summer about, you know, all this, and there was a sense outside of Vancouver that Vancouver was kind of the favorite to land Gensel, and that changed once Tampa had the cap space. So I'm not sure there was anything else the Canucks could have done when that kind of became the case as far as Gensel is concerned. Jordan in Vancouver, are Bert and Ernie breaking up? That's good. I like it. Good text message. All right, keep the thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Sure, you can take it. Chris in Maple Ridge, do you think that Tockett's personal relationship with Myers clouded the judgment with benching him or sitting him? We never hear from Tockett in regards to Soucy and Myers' consistent failures in their play. It's fair to ask as far as, I don't know about the personal side, I don't think it's necessarily that, but it's fair to ask, are they getting too much rope, right? And you know, as far as, you know, matchups and all that, like tonight, again, like Soucy played under 14 minutes. Like, he wasn't hard matched against the opposition's top lines. And even Tyler Myers, again, had under 19 minutes of ice time tonight, 18:04. So I do think there was a part of getting them away from some tough matchups, but eventually you're going to be out there against other teams. Like, to me, Noah Juulsa is not going to help you more than Myers. I don't think DeHarnay is helping you more than Myers. You can talk me into Brännström right now than Soucy, because like, the puck's just exploding on Soucy's stick every time he has it. Like, it's a turnover, the puck's exploding, he's not making the right read. It's clear the confidence isn't there. Like, and tonight, in fairness, Brännström played more than Soucy. Should that be a thing until Soucy finds his game?
I mean, I guess you might have to try it. I just feel like you're going to reveal other problems, too. I like that Nick Foligno goal just might crop up more if it's suddenly Chris Kreider that Brännström has to defend regularly. You're going to go against David Pastrnak in a couple of games.
Yeah.
Brady Tkachuk next game. Tim Stützle. Claude Giroux. Like, if Brännström is out against them, what's going to happen? Honestly, like, Drake Batherson. He can put up points. Just in general, like, I kind of feel like you'll see other issues in huge minutes. But, hey, like,
but they're bleeding. The thing is, like, it's not like – for all the talking, you're right. You're not wrong about those things. But it's not like this guy's offering you anything totally better right now, right?
Especially if, like, I'm still pro not breaking up Hughes and Hronek. The thing is like, they have to be excellent. Especially right now. Like, that's your biggest edge right now. Without Pettersson at his, like, peak game – obviously, without some of the absences, like, you need Hughes and Hronek to be exceptional. And tonight, they were good. Fine. You know, Hughes gets unlucky with the Will Cooley goal because Kaapo Kakko makes this unreal touch, kind of throwing Hughes off. But you need them to be at their best.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll try to hit some more. We'll get some player audio on the other side. Plus, Ian McIntyre is going to join us after a 4-3 loss by the Canucks on home ice against the New York Rangers. It's Satyar Shah with Big Nazar. This is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Find them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next on the Home of Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Pruba retreats to it behind the net. Far corner for Lindgren. Middle of the ice for Zibanejad. Bank pass to center for Lafreniere. In behind Hronek on a breakaway. Alexi Lafreniere stopped by Shelovs as he tried to deke to the backhand. And the Canuck goaltender held it out to keep the game tied at 3.
Canucks go on to lose 4-3 on home ice against the New York Rangers, and this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And you can we'll hit some of your questions and comments here as the show goes on. Stephen White Rock says, it's crazy that Quinn Hughes plays at such a high level. You just said the way he played tonight was fine. Good. Hughes isn't a problem. DeBrusque is, though. I lost count how many ankles Quinn broke tonight. I mean, Quinn's really good, and he does incredible things, right? And I think he does normalize a lot of it. I don't think he's playing his best at the moment compared to where he was earlier this season, but I think he did everything he could tonight to try to will the team back, and I don't have too many gripes with his play outside of perhaps sometimes forcing some shots that I'd like to see him pass off a little bit, but outside of that, you know, I thought as far as his minutes went, he spent a lot of time against the opposition's top lines. I mean, essentially went head-to-head against the Panarin-Trocheck line tonight. And then he also spent a significant amount of time against Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider. Like, we're talking about the top six were the top six players, forwards, that he was matched up against tonight. So, you know, there wasn't any sheltering, so to speak, and he did spend a significant time. And I wonder, because of the struggles of Soucy and Myers, is one of the reasons why he spent even more time against the other team's top six tonight.
Yeah, okay, so let me rephrase. As we said, Hughes and Hronek need to be exceptional.
Yes.
Let's just say
Quinn. Hronek's had some struggles.
Hronek is the one that's got to, like, really elevate that pair to be superstar.
Yeah, level. And do you split them up at this point?
I still don't want to. I still think it gives you your best chance. I mean, look, they create a goal, two goals today.
Yeah.
because Quinn makes a great play on the
On the first goal, he scores it, and I mean, all Hronek does is pass it over to him. All he does. I mean, he passes
the
over
Garland
the blue
goal
line.
Too. Yeah, because he's the one that gets away from Trocheck.
Yeah.
So they help create two goals, but to me, I still think there's more from Filip Hronek.
Yeah, offensively too. I actually like the way he's played defensively. And then that kind of struggles, those struggles kind of rear their ugly head for a few games. I thought it was slightly better, but there's more there to his game. But that's something that maybe they look at. I know Quinn doesn't want them to split that up, and ultimately we'll see if they stay together or not here. And, you know, as far as the goals that were scored tonight, let's work through them. The first goal was scored, and it was a great play by Quinn Hughes, but you saw the determination through the neutral zone with how fast he skated through. You saw Pettersson determined on the zone entry, and some good work along the boards to win a puck battle. And sometimes it's all you got to do to create space for yourself.
Just three guys crashing on the wall.
Yeah.
Sherwood, go figure, first one there. DeBrusk follows in, and Petey's the one that cuts off a pass up the wall, and then around the horn over to Quinn Hughes. And he dances around Jacob Trouba. And then a very nice backhand as well, getting around Igor Shesterkin.
Yeah, so great job there by Quinn Hughes. And that made it 1-0. The Rangers tied it at 1-1. Also took the 2-1 lead. And that's when the Canucks were able to tie things up 2-2. And, you know, you talk about Kiefer Sherwood doing his thing in that line. And honestly, like, the thing I liked about this play was – and Soucy, give him credit. Soucy makes a good play on this play, right? He makes a good play, gets the puck around, and Sherwood does what he does, wins the puck battle, makes a nice play to Pettersson. And once you get out of the zone with speed, you can really put pressure on the opposition. That's exactly what happens. And one thing I really liked, too, before Pettersson made that pass to Sherwood, was the way he kind of backed off the defenders. He went to the middle a bit, created a little bit of space, and was able to flip it over to Sherwood.
Yeah, he draws Ryan Lindgren over towards him, and that opens up that lane for Sherwood to streak into, takes the pass, and beats Igor Shesterkin again, who looked like he could get got early on in that first period, but he also made some big saves. And I think his early stretch there after the Hughes goal, he made a couple of big pad saves on Sherwood, and they're just like paddles.
Yeah,
he just reacts so well, and everything just looks so easy. And then the Sherwood goal was a nice shot for him.
Yeah, it really was, and he finishes to make it 2-2. And then the New York Rangers, again, they take the 3-2 lead, and a bit of a lucky one here. I mean, the puck goes up the middle. Kako tips it. Cooley gets a breakaway and ends up beating Artur Shilovs. And then Connor Garland. And Connor Garland, note on Garland, as soon as the game ended, he left to go to the hospital to be with his wife, who is still expecting. So he scored a goal tonight, Bick, and I'll let you break this down, but it was not technically a baby bump goal because the baby has not yet been born, hopefully tonight and hopefully healthy, and he's already taken off to be with his wife in hospital again. But Connor Garland brought the Canucks back again to tie at 3-3.
Yeah, Quinn out of the defensive zone, evading Trocheck, who was just on him, harassing him, and then gets it up to Piu Suter out wide to Joshua, who gets the easy entry, and he just pulls up. But when you pull up and you've got full access to the ice, you're not spinning, as that term that Rick Tocchet loves to use. You get to see the whole play develop in front of you, and he just hits a trailing Connor Garland, who gets the pre-baby goal in this spot. Keep that puck. You can be like, hey, kiddo, scored this one right before you were born.
Yeah, no, it would have been. And then maybe you have a baby bump one as well. You have two. You can get bookend both of them after it happens. But, yeah, and that made it 3-3, and we broke down the game-winning goal. The Canucks actually win the draw. They get the puck out, and then Rangers come back in. Pettersson initially makes a good play on Zibanejad, and Zibanejad makes
an awesome play.
But then Zibanejad gets it right back.
Pettersson, like, does a really high-level play and completes 99% of it, and Zibanejad just makes a better play.
Yeah, and then, he goes back in. And this is where Pettersson, as much as he had a good night, and we'll play audio here coming up in a second, but from Pettersson and from Sherwood, but it's one thing to lose the puck. You have to go and grab the right guy, and he loses track of Chris Kreider there as well.
Yeah, I think it's a tough spot. Like, it's all happening so fast. He could have stayed with Mika Zibanejad and let Tyler Myers stay on the inside. And once he kind of commits to Kreider, maybe Myers is the one that goes after Zibanejad. But then you really got to chip a body. You got to take Kreider out of the play. Yeah. And he doesn't.
He doesn't, right?
And so he misses the puck, Kreider chips it around, and the rest just unfolds.
But it compounds, right? Because I'm not sure what Soucy's doing. He goes down on one knee on that play, and then Myers ends up all the way. Like, you don't need to finish your check and take a guy out. You know how we talk about Sherwood does a great job of hitting guys but never takes himself out of the play?
Sure.
I'm all for finishing a check, but not when you put yourself out of the play.
Threat assessment, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like I would have been fine with him just kind of ushering across and go back to the middle of the ice again. Like, you don't need your right-hand defenseman when the play's in the middle of the ice to be on the far boards, right? So just not a great defensive moment for, you know, those three guys in question. And that's your game-winning goal. It makes it 4-3. Is there something you want to hit on text inbox before we hear from Elias Pettersson and Kiefer Sherwood?
650. I couldn't keep up with the inbox, so I shied away from it for a minute.
Keith from Haney, like everybody else. All the best to the Garland family
as
they're expecting their newborn.
This one, Hussein from Coquitlam, gutsy effort for the team tonight, but when will Tocchet split up the Soucy and Myers pairing? They've been brutal together. I find it hard to believe trying something else for an extended run, two or three games, would be much worse than we're getting right now. Get Branstrom in the top four or pull the trigger on a deal. The team can't survive with this defense for much longer in a season where we see ourselves as a contender. Mitchell and Langley texted, is that Hoglander's last game as a Canuck?
No.
I think that's a reference to saying, is he a trade chip, basically? And
I mean,
they
he could
use
be.
Use him to improve the defense that way.
I mean, he played 10:06 tonight. And a quick thought on, you know, the young guys. Hoglander, a bad penalty. You saw the coach roll his eyes a couple times. So, you know, he doesn't love the play. Lekker-Mäki, to me, looked like a player who needs more time in the minors tonight,
so
Vic.
Nate and is texting in here, 650, 650. Oh, I just lost it. Oh, man. Sorry, Nate. Here it is. Okay, I think it's time to send Lekker-Mäki back down to the AHL. I don't see a point in playing if he's not going to get be with Pettersson or Miller. That third line was not good tonight. And they're just moments. You know, we've gotten these texts a lot over the last couple of games. Again, I think he gets into good spaces. He's obviously got the shot.
Yeah.
Like I'm not worried about the game sense, which is really important for a winger. Like that's a nice bonus that he's not just an empty player looking to trigger the shot. But man, does he look young and get pushed around. He's looking like a young Bick Nizar in the club when the bouncer's trolling around. It's like, get this guy
out of
here.
Just like chucks you away.
Throwing me out there.
I mean, he was battling. He got into corners. Like the effort was there. I am okay with him being here. He doesn't, to me, look like he's drowning necessarily. But that line really struggled. And, you know, Atu Ratu tonight, you know, they put him in some spots to take some key face-offs, and he struggled in the face-off circle. 2 wins, 9 losses, only 18%, and he played under 9 minutes. So, you know, for the young guys, and a tough opposition tonight, and they were trailing and had to kind of lean on some guys a little bit. But, you know, for the young guys tonight, you kind of chalk it up as a learning experience, but also a night that kind of shows they're not quite ready for playing anything more than a sheltered role at the moment.
The face-off circle is a notable absence of JT Miller there. 33% on the night. Nobody is above 50%. Every Rangers player was above 50 tonight.
Yeah. So something that they lost in a big way was
including Kaapo Kakko, took 4 faceoffs.
Good for Kaapo. Not great for the Canucks, I suppose. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll try to hit some more as the show goes on. We mentioned Kiefer Sherwood had a goal tonight, a big performance, and he did meet with the media tonight and was asked about how they performed against the Rangers.
I thought we deserved that. I think it was probably our best game, best effort just in a while, and hard to take away stuff when we lose, you know, but I think there's a lot of good that we can continue to build on and taking the road trip, if we stick to that effort and predictability and just connection all over the ice, I think we're going to end up winning a lot more games. I think we just trust the process more. So,
you had 7 shots, 8 hits, but your line drew the tough matchup tonight. It's a Banajad's line and Kreider, yet you guys seem to hold your own against them. What do you take from that against a tough line?
Yeah, I mean, I thought we created a lot. We made them made a hard matchup, but again, it just stings that the game winner in the third is can't let that happen. So I know we got maybe tighten up the details on that one, but I thought we played them pretty well for the most part. Like I said, I just think we got to stick to the process and build off the things that we did well, and then just tighten up a couple things here and there so, to limit their chances against.
You talked about connection all over the ice. How hard is it to maintain that when you've got guys coming in and out of the lineup?
Yeah, well, I think it says a lot about the culture. You know, guys are able to come in and contribute, and I think a lot of the guys that are stepping in right now are playing the right way, and I think details are a big part of us. You know, it's been an emphasis lately of just sticking with it and sharpening the details in all three ends. So it doesn't matter whose name is called, as long as they're ready and ready to contribute. You know, that's all we can ask for.
Kiefer, you scored the goal off the rush, but you also seemed to handcuff Shesterkin, one in the second and then another one in the third. Were you seeing anything?
Just trying to trust my shot. It was a great play by Petey. I mean, his poise to suck the D over and then find me on the wing was obviously created the chance. The other one, I don't know. I got to just bury that. It's just trying to use my shot, I guess, more than anything.
Yeah. Moving up in the lineup, playing with Pedersen, does that come naturally to you? Do you play just the same way on a line like that versus playing down on the lineup?
Yeah, I think it's more important how you play than who you play with. It's kind of a saying I'm trying to embody right now and just play my game. Obviously, he's a world-class player, but you know, they're there for a reason, so I just got to play hard, put my work boots on, and try to get them the puck, because obviously he's lethal, and he's finding his game now, which is really important for us.
That is Kiefer Sherwood after a tough 4-3 loss, and said the Canucks deserved better tonight. And to break this game down even more, it's time to welcome in the man we call the triple threat to close this one out. You watch him on TV, you read him on digital, you're about to hear him on radio. He is the one and only Ian McIntyre.
Can we please get Kiefer Sherwood on the first unit power play? Doesn't that make sense? Like, a guy who shoots the puck like he does and is rambunctious, so you know he's going to recover pucks and sustain plays. It just seems like a natural.
I mean, I guess the obvious guy to take out would be Lekromäki.
Yes. Yes. Oh, sorry. I don't know if my slight scoff came across the airwaves there.
Yeah.
Nothing against Lekromäki. I just think, you know, it's been a few games now. And, you know, physically he's challenged, obviously, to play at this level right now. Has incredible upside and that great shot. But I think that was a good thing tonight that he moved down the lineup, and a good thing that Kiefer Sherwood moved up. Yes, I'd be all for seeing Sherwood replace Lekromäki on the first unit power play if it comes to that.
Yeah, so we'll see if they make that adjustment to put Kiefer Sherwood there. But I don't think we can say enough about how good he's been.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, tonight was one of those games, too, where you really missed not having some of your key contributors. And we were talking before you joined us about Lekromäki. Now, obviously, JT was struggling the last couple of games. His game trailed off. He wasn't making a difference tonight. Rautu struggled in the faceoff circle. You know, Baines had a hard time going. I think those guys can help you in supporting roles, but if you're asking a bit more, tonight was a sign of not quite ready to do more than what they've been asked to do so far.
Yeah. But, you know, in the end, it shouldn't be those guys that you're counting on to carry your team through these kind of injuries. It's great that they get a chance to play and, as Tockett said, be in pressure situations. But the guys, especially up front, that you want to step up, you want to see Jake DeBrusk, you want to see Teddy Bluger. Pius Suter has been very good, but he's, you know, was kind of quiet tonight. Garland, you never have any complaints. His motor is always going, and, you know, what a story that would have been had they won this game. You know, he leaves his wife at the maternity ward to come to the rink.
Yeah.
Goes back afterward. You know, there's more experienced guys that I would say should have more of the burden right now of helping this team out when Miller and Besser, your number one center and your number one winger, are both missing. Bick, speak.
We chatted a lot about solutions on the back end.
That's excellent that you have ideas for that.
No, we didn't really. That's a thing. We were like, should you break up Hronek and Hughes? And what are you going to do with Susi Myers right now? Does Ian McIntyre have alternate solutions here?
No, because I said
that's the thing, right?
I mean, my answer was the same as last game. It, you know, Forbert's not available. Desharnais took the skate today, so that's a good sign. Maybe he can come back in. I just think it's hard. It's hard to split Susi and Myers because they
they get the crappy end of the stick when it comes to matchups, mm-hmm. and they do every game. And that's something I hope people realize that. It's a smart market. People are pretty in tune. I think they understand mm-hmm. that they get the tough matchups every night. So unless you're going to shift those matchups to, I presume it would have to be Hughes and Roenick, which is going to take away a lot of the offensive freedom, or at least take a lot more energy away from Quinn mm-hmm. to defend. Unless you're going to do that, I don't really see how you can change those pairings, because I don't think you can play, certainly you can't play Juulsen in the top four. You can't, you know, I don't know that it's a good idea to try Brännström against in a matchup role. You know, you could have Brännström if, I think you could have Brännström in your top four if your second pairing isn't designated as the pairing that has all the hardest matchups and
right.
the great majority of defensive zone starts. So I think it's tough. Until Forbert gets healthy, hopefully Desharnais back. Forbert's a guy that they've really missed, I think.
Yeah.
And he had a slow start, as so many of these new guys did, and then it seemed like his game was coming around, then he got hurt. A freak thing at the practice in Anaheim. So hopefully he gets back. Susie, man, that was it, the second goal?
Yeah.
I mean, that says everything about how things are going for him, because it just seems you get into this kind of spiral where everything goes wrong, and yes, he makes mistakes, but the amount of bounces that go against yeah. him right now, the bad luck. Mind you, there's a lot of bad luck against this team. You know, the winning goal wasn't a clean goal for the Rangers. It was kind of a scruffy entry that it looked like they had blown, and then Pettersson loses the puck, and as he turns, Kreider skates by him. And even the breakaway goal, you know, where it's a stretch pass and a guy's reaching, I don't think there was any intent to slow and angle the puck perfectly for a Ranger breakaway on that. So there's a lot of bad luck, but that play, you know, that bounce straight off Susie's skate to Kako and right onto his stick for essentially an open net goal. I know Shelov's was there, but he had no way to track the puck and react to that. To me, that in a nutshell is how things are going these days for Carson Soucy. But I mean, as he will tell you, he's got to be better.
It's just a tough reality to be like, the best solution right now is just grit your teeth and game by game to work your way out of it. But they're stacking up as like unfortunate nights.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you blend things a bit more. I forget the term that Adam Foote used before the start of last season. Was it by committee?
Yeah,
it was going to
yeah,
be a defense yeah. by committee. Maybe that's what you have to do, and you mix Roenick and Hughes into other pairings, even though they're so good together. Of course you want to keep them
so
that,
good. Yeah.
You want to keep them that way. And importantly, Quinn loves playing with Roenick because he feels he gets a half dozen more touches yeah. a game with the puck. And if he gets a half dozen more touches, that's probably a couple of more scoring chances for the team. So there is a huge benefit, as we've seen, to playing them together. But maybe you have to start to blend. Either that or you don't have a designated
yeah.
shutdown pairing. And, of course, on the road, you're going to have less ability to get whatever matchups you want anyways. So maybe they start to go away from that, and maybe mm-hmm. just naturally Hughes and Roenick do a little more of the heavy lifting. Maybe it doesn't expose Myers and Soucy as much. But
yeah.
As I've said before, I think Tyler Myers is pretty solid right now. I just think that he is as suffering as we saw, you know, certainly under Bruce Boudreau. He's just suffering because there's not dependability right there with his partner, because Soucy's struggling so much.
Well, I know you were tracking zone exits last game, Bick. And,
the last game, yeah.
Soucy struggled.
A little analytics on the side for you.
I told
huh?
you the spreadsheets are important.
Yeah, they are. Yes. But one thing you were tracking, and it was interesting, was that Soucy struggled to get the puck out of his own zone significantly more than Myers did.
Yeah. It improved a lot last against the Preds for Myers by the third period, that he clipped over
60%. Yeah.
60%. But again, I was tracking under pressure touches in the defensive zone, but Soucy was at like,
yeah,
it's been tough.
30, well, 40%.
I think he's trying to simplify things, and at times, I mean, it's not a bad concept, but you still have to try and make a play.
Yeah.
You know, the puck can't just be radioactive to you, and right now it feels like every play, every touch he has is fraught with danger.
And the thing is, he made a good play on the Sherwood goal, right? It was a quick decision, just like the hard rim immediately after getting that puck. You think, all right, you got something going your way now. Can you build upon it? And it's like, no, it didn't happen at all.
And they actually got a little luck on that too, because yes, he made a good play and a decisive play, but it was still red by the Rangers. And I forget who it was. I think it was Riley Smith.
There was a guy on the boards. Yeah.
Riley Smith was waiting for the puck, but he couldn't keep it in. And then he got caught on the 3-on-2. He was the guy that Sherwood skated away from.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, every time
stuff happens in hockey.
It does. I mean, and sometimes, bad bounces happen for you. And the other thing I wanted to ask you about, we haven't really talked about this a lot. We've had, a lot to kind of dig through after this game. But Dakota Joshua, obviously, we're all happy to see him come back. And he's working his game. But it's pretty clear that he's not quite up to speed. And I think he should play. But instead of maybe trying to get him going, you might want to play somebody who's more effective on that line. I think especially in this situation where we're at now, keep the Pettersson and Sherwood line together. They were fantastic. But all other three lines tonight got crushed, right? Are you at a point where you just got to play your top six guys and, put guys down the lap? I know you want to get Joshua going, but you kind of need to have other lines that can have some sort of a push. And every line Joshua's been on so far has had trouble really stringing play together in the offensive zone.
Yeah, but again, what are the alternatives?
I put Heinen there.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say Danton Heinen is about the only guy that you could play up, because certainly I don't think you're going to get better results with Hoglander right now.
Yeah, don't disagree about
playing.
That, for sure.
Baines, I actually would like to see get another chance, because he is such a dynamic player that he looks like a guy who might be able to, in the right moment, just create something. I don't think that they're bending over backwards to try to get Joshua going. I just don't think they have a lot of options. And I do think the idea that if you play Joshua with Garland, and the premise is that Garland is going to be effective no matter what, right? Because he always seems to have the puck, his motor's always going. He seems effective no matter who he plays with. If you play Joshua with Garland, there's a better chance that he comes around quicker, because this is familiar to him. This is with whom Joshua had his breakthrough season last year. So I can understand the thinking of it. But yes, Joshua is clearly not last year's player. But, as we've said before, people, if that's what their expectation was, they were seriously delusional that he was just going to come back. I mean, this is the equivalent of the preseason for him. I mean, four games, so most guys don't play four preseason games. But he's four games and, what, a week, is it? Or 8 days or nine? I don't even know when his first game was. But a little more than a week he's been playing. And
it's been a lot of games in a week, right? Like four games in 7 days.
And it's tough. Even if it were the first four games of the season, it would be tough enough. But it's four games in the middle of November when everybody else is well into a regular season rhythm and regular season speed. So there's no way around it. You're just going to have some growing pains or adjustment pains as Joshua comes back. I think in some ways he's been incrementally better each game. Tonight, at least he made a play on a goal, which will give him a little bit of confidence. But yeah, his skating's not there. His physicality's not there. And again, probably it would have been a surprise if those things were there for a guy who's coming back from cancer surgery.
Yeah. Before we wrap up and go here, we have a couple minutes, but the 6-game road trip starts on Saturday. No JT Miller. We're not expecting, at least anytime soon, as far as the road trip is concerned. Some better news on Besser and some better news on Demko skating. And the coach was very optimistic on Demko stringing together good practices, looking good, and he's going on a trip. As far as these absences, like, what is your take on what we were kind of seeing over the past, few days here, and what to kind of expect, especially on this critical 6-game road trip all of a sudden?
Well, I think it's good. And the schedule, we know that the schedule has favored them generally, right? The spacing of the games and the lack of back-to-backs. And it's going to continue to do so at the start of that trip. And I think this is a good thing. I think today a day like this, it's a swirl of emotions. And the team, by the time you get to puck drop, it's as strained emotionally as it is in terms of lineup and who's available. Having, you know, a practice tomorrow at UBC, a travel day Thursday, a practice, full practice in the Eastern time zone in Ottawa on Friday, I think it's a good chance to kind of reset, let everybody get their head around what's happening with the team and who's missing and the challenge now ahead of them. And then they also get another practice in Boston, a day off, and then another practice in Boston before they play the Bruins, who've just fired their coach, which for the Canucks is probably a bad thing.
Yeah.
Probably would have been better if Montgomery was still there next week. But, you know, beyond that, I just don't think you can count on any of the cavalry showing up. Like, we've waited so long for Demko, and yes, there's encouraging things, and yes, he's doing more and more each practice, and yes, eventually he's going to play.
Yeah.
But I don't know that there's any dependability there right now to say, okay, well, you know, by next week on the road trip or by the end of the road trip, he'll be playing, but hopefully he will. JT's leave of absence, the Canucks are the only ones outside of JT's family and friends who know what's going on, and they're obviously not going to tell us.
Yeah.
But you know, it certainly seems people generally don't take a leave of absence for 3 days,
yeah,
or two games or one, you know, so just figure on him being out indefinitely, which is how they worded the leave of absence, and I think that's very good to be transparent in that respect. The good news is Brock is back on the ice. The bad news, he's coming back from a concussion, and we know that those timelines aren't linear.
Tricky at the best of times.
Tricky at the best, and you know, Tucker Poolman wasn't a concussion, but it was neurology, and look what happened with him, and you know, the false starts and you know, Ferland before that.
Yeah.
This is a really dangerous condition to be work, and you have to be careful. I'm sure that they will be with Brock, and I'm sure Brock will be too. Maybe they get Brock back in a week, and that would be really good if that can happen. But for the most part, it's going to have to be these guys.
Yeah.
I wonder, again, as an organization, they're going to have a little more time to think about this. They'll be looking at the waiver wire. They'll be looking and making calls. Who's available? Is there a forward they can bring in who doesn't cost them too much in the big picture long term, who can help them right now? Those will be conversations they have. Do they have the right guys here from the minors? Should you have somebody like Phil DiGiuseppe, who I know doesn't get anybody's heart racing, but is a really solid, experienced, dependable NHL player for what you would need right now. And so we'll see what the lineup looks like for Saturday and Tuesday. Just to reiterate, I think it's good that they have some time, but they're also going to have to, I think part of the understanding and what they're going to have to get their heads around, that these guys could still be missing a while. So it's not a matter of, well, let's just try and get through a game or two and then we'll start getting guys back, because I don't see that they can count on that.
No, absolutely. And it's going to be fascinating on the road trip. Are you heading out?
I am heading out.
On Saturday? You'll be there for Saturday?
Travel day Thursday. You're just wondering where I'll be for the post-game show.
Well, obviously.
Saturday. That's all you care about.
What's the tourist spot?
You just like me for my closing abilities.
Well, at least, you know, you have function.
Or will. Yes. My willingness to come on and give you guys a break for the last 15 minutes.
No, it's your knowledge.
Yes, I'm traveling to Ottawa.
Very good.
I love those. It's a kind of strange this year. For as last while, Ottawa's been tied in with Toronto and Montreal, and it's been an Eastern Canadian swing. It's different this time. But the whenever the Canucks go east, they have a following, and Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday, I know Ottawa's kind of in transition. Travis Green, I do think, and Mike Yeo as well, and Nolan Baumgartner is like Canucks alumni there. I do think they're going to get it all straightened out, and that team is going to be a better team because of their changes. But they're still in transition, so we'll see how that game goes. But, yes, I'll be there. I'll be in Boston. I'll be in Pittsburgh, and then I'm coming home.
Oh, very good.
Game 4 is in Buffalo, so I'm coming home after game 3.
Probably a good idea. Yeah. Come actually, back before Buffalo and Detroit. I mean, you're getting out of the right time.
Yeah. Well, Detroit is tough on a number of levels. Partly, it's one of those places you just can't. It's hard to fly into and out of. A little easier to fly into from the east than from the west. But it's always a nightmare, and I believe that's an early game as well.
Yeah, both games are early.
So, you know, I wouldn't have minded driving to Buffalo, and I don't mind games in Buffalo. It is kind of a hockey town. Well, so is Detroit. Detroit's new rink is magnificent for people who like to travel and see the Canucks on the road. That should be on people's bucket list, even if Detroit is not. But it's still a fine city, I'm sure. It's actually a lot different, like a lot of places, very different than when I started covering the team, and different for the better. But that's a great ring. I would have driven to Buffalo, though. It's a four-hour drive from Pittsburgh. I've done it before. And much easier than flying, because you can't fly direct. Because why would you be able to fly direct?
Who wants Pittsburgh, to fly direct? Yeah.
Between Pittsburgh and Buffalo. But I'll be on the road next week.
Well, we look forward to chatting with you from Ottawa on Saturday.
I'll look forward to that as well.
Thank you, as always. Make sure to read his latest on sportsnet.ca. Great stuff, as always, from Ian McIntyre. He's Bick Nizar. Well-earned day off tomorrow, so go and rest up. He's got kids to coach.
Yeah. Busy day.
You had a day off yesterday?
I did, yes. Yeah. I took yesterday off.
Life of you radio guys.
Eh? I mean, I only work 7 straight days, that's all.
Oh, wow.
It's hockey season, it's hockey, man.
Well, I pretty much... This is the first day off I've taken in 3 months.
Okay.
All right.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
Yeah, no,
you,
okay.
You guys work hard, and radio's a hard business. You got to go home and ice your vocal cords now.
Well, yeah, I got to go and drink some chamomile tea, chamomile tea. I'm just kidding. All right. Great stuff as always. It's a joke. I'll tell you about it later.
Yeah.
Thanks to Josh Elliott Wolf. Thanks to Frass Eddie Gregory and all of you for listening and participating on the show. Great stuff as always. I'm Satya Arshaw, back with Dan Riccio for Canuck Central tomorrow, 4 to 6. We have Kevin Woodley joining us, plus overrated, underrated. This has been the Canuck Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.